you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome everyone to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Owen Walker. Now, in this episode, we have Owen walk through exactly how he started his online business and website and went from essentially zero all the way to mid six figures and then exit on the other side. So we get a good look at how he managed to scale his website, especially in terms of his SOPs, his systems. He's a big system man and loves building systems and making things automated. So that's one that we cover there that can help you with running your business and giving back your time. And we cover a bunch of other bits and pieces as well around monetization, hiring, and anything to do with online business and entrepreneurship. So if you're looking to essentially build and scale your business to exit, this is the perfect episode for you. If you want to check out his website that he built, scaled, and sold, it's at scienceforsport.com, and it'll also be in the description. Cheers.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Owen Walker. Welcome, Owen.
Hi, James. How are you, mate?
Good, man. So for the people listening to this podcast, if you go back a couple of podcasts and listen to Jared Krause's podcast we did, I think it was a few weeks ago now, we actually gave Owen a shout out on that podcast there too. And Owen is the guy that Jared met at, was it at the skate park?
It was at the skate park, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So that skate park story, this is the Owen from that skate park. Now, I've actually, I guess, been writing for your website's since 2017, I think, when I first came on board back in the day, near the infancy. So it's been about 5 years. I'm still writing. So if anyone will say, I'm still actually writing for Owen's website, which he has now exited, but still involved with. So maybe for the listeners, do you want to maybe give a brief background about yourself and then we'll dive into the website? And if you're happy to share what the website is, you can do that too.
Yeah, no problem at all. Firstly, mate, it's been an honor having you write for us for the last 5 years. So, like, it's been brilliant the whole time. A bit of background about myself. I kind of tried to be a footballer. That's a soccer player for Americans. But, yeah, I always wanted to be a pro footballer and failed. So, like every sports scientist, S&C coach, you kind of go, right, okay, I want to work in the field, but not that. I originally thought physiotherapy, went and studied sports science. During my sports science degree, realised there was no online resource for learning about sports science, a go-to place. Saw bodybuilding.com, I think 21-year-old out of Idaho. I think he started it, we sold it at 21 for like 100 million. And I was like, fuck, like, this is what I should do, is build an encyclopedia for sports science and medicine and it be the go-to place. So that was the original vision. And yeah, that's where it came from, I suppose.
Nice. Are you able to share the site, or is the site, I guess, under wraps?
No, I can share this side. Scienceforsport.com. So FOR is that, scienceforsport.com. And you can obviously see us on Instagram and stuff like that. I will say as well, I think that, like, in its current state, the website looks very simplistic, for a better word, but a bit average and stuff like that. But obviously, everything that goes in, the additional digital assets like the podcast, the Instagram, the email list, the following, and the user base, monthly recurring revenue is everything that kind of bolsters up that valuation and stuff. So check it out if you fancy it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if anyone's, yeah, while you listen to this, check out scienceforsport.com. But I guess for anyone listening who kind of wants to get an idea of where the site fits in the space, it would be like, do you have your typical, as you mentioned, bodybuilding.com, teenager.com as your general fitness magazine sites for like the general population? Science of Sport is probably one of the most or more well-known, I guess, sports science brands that's more targeted towards, I guess, strength conditioning coaches and, I guess, professionals, essentially. But it does also have some carryover into that general fitness area as well, but more geared towards that coaching side. So a little higher level information on there. But maybe for the listeners, do you want to maybe touch on how you got this started? You mentioned obviously you came across some 21 year old selling bodybuilding.com for a stupid amount of money. So obviously you saw that. What was your next step to get this thing started?
So I probably kind of realized that and saw that, I think it was 2012, maybe a little bit before 2010, 2011, when I kind of saw bodybuilding.com and thought maybe I should do something myself. At the time, I was in my first or second year of studying at university. I did 4 years total, so undergraduate degree, master's degree. And I actually did nothing really with it until after university. So finished university 2014. I got a job working for a professional football club as a sports scientist, and I did that kind of for like a year, and then I decided that actually I wanted to go country shopping, and I moved to California, then I moved to Australia. And during that transition as well, I thought, okay, well, I'm resigning from my position at the club, and I always wanted to build Science for Sport, so why don't I set about building it, and then move my income source online so that I can live and work from wherever I want to in the world and still work in the realms of sports science, which I kind of trained in and I wanted to do. So we're looking at sort of 2015 now, when I started to get wheels turning. I had no idea what I was doing about business, just for the record for everyone. I actually launched the website. And I didn't know what I was going to sell. I just launched the website, thought if I get traffic, then eventually I can come up with an idea on how I can monetize it. So I was building away behind closed doors. I wrote about 40 articles, like blog post type things, so that I could drip feed the website, put initial like bulk on the website when I launched, and then drip feed it and then keep up. So I had a backlog of content. And this was April 2016 was when I launched the website without a product. December 2016 is when I introduced the product and managed to monetize it.
Gotcha. I think on one of our first calls, this must have been 2017 now, you mentioned about you grew an Instagram page, and that was part of the reason for the growth in traffic.
Yeah, so I tried to – one thing about me, my best strength is also my best weakness. I'm extremely analytical about everything. So I like – something happens, I scratch away at it, scratch at the surface and think, what's the best way to do this? What's the best way to do that? Best way to do that? So – before I launched the website, I launched a Facebook page. This is when Facebook was killing it in terms of organic traffic. Instagram was really nothing to be used at the time, which makes me sound like an absolute dinosaur. So Instagram wasn't really a place for traffic and stuff. It was all Facebook. And so I started a Facebook page and started sending – it's built a bit of a following – and an audience on Facebook, then launched a website. And so when I say I reverse engineered it, sorry, I come back. I had a bigger vision of opening a lot of sports performance centers. So those are like high performance fitness centers, gyms, purely for athletes, basically. That was the vision. And that's what I wanted to do. But I thought, if I open one of those and I do the big unveil, cut the rope, everybody comes in, or cut the ribbon, like, nobody's going to turn up if I haven't got an audience. So I thought, okay, well, I could start a website and build an audience so that when I open the facilities, people know about us and come in. And I thought, okay, before I start a website, why not start a Facebook page? And that's what I mean about scratching the surface and thinking, how can I reverse it, this engineer to get the minimal risk possible? Because a large risk, if you open a facility, is going to cost you tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars, or pounds, depending where you are, whatever. But so I thought website's low cost, and then Facebook again is even more low cost. So I reverse engineered it that way, built the audience, built the website, and then went from there.
Yeah, smart. Just taking action, building traffic, and then essentially going from there. Otherwise, people get too stuck in analysis paralysis, trying to figure out, you know, what the grand plan is. But you probably dodged a bullet, not opening those facilities because COVID rolled around, and obviously, I guess as well, gyms aren't exactly profitable things.
They're not, no. And so that's something I come to learn. If it's funny, hindsight is 2020, and that's part of the reason I wanted to exit it. So I learned a lot of lessons. Did I need to exit it to learn those lessons? Who knows? But I learned lessons now. Eventually, if I look at the grand scheme, if you gave me back the business now and I had it in full realm, I would still open those facilities as part of a long-term strategy. I'd build a group structure company, and the facilities, the actual property and real estate and stuff, those assets would be in a separate subsidiary, and then go for it. But when you add the physical to the digital, you substantiate your authority in the market. So you know what I mean? You're recording content in your facilities. You've got athletes in your facilities. That just shows so much in terms of authority in the market. If you stay purely digital, which is what I did, you just got to leverage other people's stuff, which can be difficult.
Yeah, I want to actually dive a little bit later into that, into what you would do if you hadn't sold the website. But I want to come back. You mentioned obviously how analytical you are, and I guess I've seen this as well in your SOPs. And your SOPs are damn good. Like, at the time, obviously, when I first started, before I had done all this, I didn't even know there were SOPs. They were just guides for me to help. But obviously, that SOP's been revised about 3 or 4 times now into something now where someone can come in and pretty much just write a research review or whatever it is just from the SOP. So maybe that's time, because myself, for my own businesses, I don't think I have any SOPs. And it's something that I definitely need to start developing. How would you advise someone to start developing their own SOPs? Is there a method or something that you do to make it easier?
The quick answer is just do it as a step-by-step process in a Google document, which is similar to the SOP that obviously I gave you when you onboarded onto writing for us. That's a short answer. To give a little bit of information in between short answer and sort of longer answer is, if you haven't systemized your business, i.e. if you couldn't go sit on the beach in the middle of Indonesia, not turn your laptop on, not answer a phone call, not reply to anyone for 6 months, what would your business do? Would your business decline? Would it stay flat, or would it go up? Now, if it doesn't at least maintain, definitely if it doesn't go up, you don't have a business, you have a job, right? And the cash flow quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki, for anyone who's read it, will explain part of this. You've got an E and I being an E, an S, a B, and an I. And those four things refer to an employee, self-employed, business owner, or investor. Now, the goal when you're building a business is to move through those quadrants, but effectively, like, you can be an employee, work for someone. You can be self-employed, where you've got your business, and if you don't switch your laptop on, it will decline. That's a job. That's what you've got. You're just self-employed. A business is where your business will maintain or go up without your input whatsoever. that's when you know you fully, and the message I'm trying to get to that is that's when you know you fully systemized everything that you've got going on. And for the most part, with what I did, I managed to do that, at least kept it at a maintenance, but I could go away for 2 weeks and it's still on it. It was still sort of growing. Do you know what I mean? But I was still the real driver behind it. And I had to make a decision. Do I employ someone to be the driver behind it? Cause I want to step back, or do I get hungry and go for it and stuff like that? So the key message there is, if your business can't maintain or grow without you, you've got a job. And if that's the case, you need to build good systems. Now, I love systems, like I just genuinely do. I'm good at it. I realize that's just how I operate. And what, like, there's a movie called Founder, which is about Ray Kroc, the founder of the McDonald's Corporation. So obviously, if anyone who's watched it, I guess most people listen to this are entrepreneurs in some way. If you haven't watched it, go watch it, because it will sort of throw a bit of fuel on your fire. You had McDonald's, those were the original creators, and then you had Ray Kroc, who McDonald's Corporation, and it's a fun story. But he built, they built an unbelievable system, and he took that system and scaled it. Now, if you walk into it, I love this, like, because if you walk into any McDonald's around the world, all over the world, one, the consistency is unbelievable. They have certain brand promises that they keep to, and the consistency is one of them. It's phenomenal. And the best bit about McDonald's is their SOPs, their systems are that good that the entire place is run by teenagers or people with learning disabilities. Like, that's how good their systems are. And why do they do that as well? Because they get subsidies for employing those people. They get low cost labor. Like, labor is the most expensive output of any business. Now, McDonald's have gone, how can we get super cheap labor? And they've absolutely nailed it. I love it. And now when you walk into McDonald's, you don't even order with someone anymore.
You got a screen now.
They're the forefront runners on the screens. They are killing it. And soon they'll remove a lot of the people in there. And it will be probably just have a manager in there and that'll be it. The rest of the thing will be like those little hoovers that walk about on the floor and whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're just eliminating that overhead so well because their systems are that good. It's brilliant. So I got a bit amped up on systems there, but yeah, like, you have to build good systems. And my tip to anyone when it comes to building systems is just do it on a Google Doc and go step by step. Say, right, okay, I need somebody to create infographics. Okay, first thing to do is look at this one I've created and just put that infographic on the Google document. This is what I've created. I want them to look similar to this. And we did this. I had an infographic creator, right? Then log into canva.com. Depends where you create. You might create them in Adobe, Photoshop, whatever, but go canva.com. Mm. This is the template. You've already saved a template. It's got your font, your colors, your logo, all that stuff on there. Now, all you need to do is put the information on there. If you've got an infographic creator, then it depends how you do it. But the infographic creator we use was a sports scientist. It understood the industry. And then all they had to do was come up with stuff like this. That then comes into do direct them with the content that you want. The answer should be yes, but you can give them free rein in the early days and just say, yeah, this is what we want. Log into Canva, use this template, stick to this font, these colors, blah, blah, blah. Put this, do this, do this, do this. Easy. Send it to them via email. And the reason you use Google Docs, it's live. You can always update it. They can update it. And then what you should do is the best person to update those systems is the user, is the operator. Right, the user of those operations, which is that person, it's the infographic creator. If you try and update it like a year down the line, Canva might have made a few changes to how this works, now that works, and you're just not the best person for it. They use it every single day, they're the best person for it. So make them update it and pay them to update it. Take them 2 hours, pay them $25 an hour, whatever you're paying them, costs you $50, and they're maintaining and improving the system that you've built, and you just sit back and drink tea. So I don't know. I do love systems. I guess if you didn't get that picture,
I guess if you're from the UK, then you sit back and drink tea. But I'll pass on that tea. So you're building. If you're building the systems, how did you know when it was time to start hiring for these systems? Obviously, the website things have to make enough money for you to feel comfortable enough. So the website needs to cover your basic expenses. You moved overseas. You don't have income from the job anymore. So when do you see it viable to start outsourcing that stuff with your systems?
There's two versions to that. The first is day one, and you pull money from somewhere, your own pocket, you get a loan, get investors, still a loan. But ideally, there's no right or wrong. But day one, you could do that. You just need cash in order to do it. If you don't have cash and you're a bit of a wuss and you're not willing to take that risk, well, then you're going to have to do it yourself and graft away and hustle away and do that stuff to get it, to get that business cash flowing. So that then you can go, okay, right, I've got X amount of budget here. What should I hire someone for? Should I hire someone to create infographics? Should I hire someone to create content? Should I hire, well, same thing, but like articles? Should I hire someone to run the email marketing? Should I hire someone to deal with customer support? That's your decision as the founder of the company to decide where you need to allocate resources. So those are your two options. You either do it from day one using cash in your back pocket or from a loan, or you do it and run it a loss, which is using a loan from the bank. But, or second option is get it cash flowing and do it yourself until that point. But one thing you should do, and again, I love all these, I built a system for it because I froth it, is a task audit. So doing a task audit sort of monthly to find out where you're spending your time. So you write down like emails, like customer support emails, email marketing, Facebook ads, content creation, managing the team, continual learning. And then you write those things down, everything you do per week. And then you write your time cost of doing that. Right, I spend 5 hours doing this, 2 hours doing this, blah, 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 blah. Is that an operational task or a growth task? And then you identify, okay, if I'm answering customer support emails, that's an operational task. A growth task is writing marketing emails. So there's a difference. You decide which is which, and then you go, okay, right, I'm spending 5 hours a week doing customer support emails. That task needs to be outsourced. I need to write a system, hire someone from Upwork, wherever, or within your own network, hire that person, get it off your task so that you can move. There's a good analogy I like to use. If you've got an open motorway, freeway, highway, whatever, and you're in your car, if there's no other cars on the road, you can go as fast as you possibly want and as fast as you possibly can. Forget about the laws, right? You can go as fast as you possibly can. The more cars that are on that road, the more congestion, the more traffic, it slows you down. So your objective as the founder and entrepreneur, your business is to move as fast as humanly possible. So you need to keep those cars off the road. In other words, you need to keep those shit daily operational tasks out of your way so you can just go as fast as you can.
Mm. Nice. So then if you mentioned things like Facebook ads, email marketing, you know, anything like that, if you don't have experience doing that, for example, maybe you're looking to do Facebook ads, but you haven't done it, are you still writing systems for that, for the person you hire, or are you looking to hire maybe an expert in that area who will create the system for you?
Two-part answer. To the second question, the answer is yes. But before you do that, in my opinion, you need to understand it. So
yeah,
in my opinion, there's six pillars to business. I always forget one of them, but I'll try and read them off. You got product, marketing, sales, finances, operations, and team. Those are the six pillars to the business. Everything falls within those six categories, right? And so as an entrepreneur or founder, business manager, operator, whatever it is, in my opinion, you need to have a fundamental understanding of each of those. Because if you don't, if you understand five of them, but you don't understand marketing, and you go to an SEO company or a Facebook company, Facebook ads company, whatever, nine times out of 10, they're going to have your pants down. So,
yeah,
and they do all the time. I've used several different SEO agencies, several different Facebook ads. And I'll say, before I set KPIs for them, they'd give me KPI. Well, they'd say, yeah, we're going to try and do this, we're going to try and do that. And then I'd just be throwing money at them, and we weren't scaling, we weren't getting big results. When you understand it yourself, you can set the KPIs and the benchmarks for them. And if they don't deliver, you fire them, you get rid of them. But you're only going to know if you're being taken for a ride or you got your pants down or whatever, if you understand the fundamental basis of those six pillars. So to answer your question again, yes, I would outsource the Facebook ads, but I'd understand it first and give them exactly what KPIs you want them to hit. And if they don't deliver, you decide. Do you sack them, do you keep them?
By understanding them, you mean you might have to lose a little bit of money doing it yourself a bit, just so you can get a handle of how it works and what kind of results you're looking to see?
Exactly. I've read a lot of books and watched a lot of videos and done all this stuff. A lot of it falls out of your head. You forget it. You only remember, like, my interpretation really is, you only really remember things and remember things well when you feel the pain. You have to feel the pain to remember it, to want to avoid it in the future. So if you go run, I wouldn't just say start running Facebook ads and spend $1,000 a day. I wouldn't say that. You can do that, but it's going to be a costly way. I would say
that's too much pain.
Yeah, far too much pain. So, especially if you're an early stage startup. So, yeah, way too much. And I would find the experts in the space. I'd read their blog. I'd watch their videos. I'd get a fundamental understanding. I'd flick around the Facebook ads. I'd speak to someone who's an expert, jump on the phone, pay them $200 to sit down with you for an hour, whatever their cost is. And just give you some heads up, because that will save you more money when you start trying it. And then once I run by a 70% rule, when you're 70% comfortable, you understand it enough, then move on. That's great, right? 70% is perfect. That for me, 70% is perfect, because if you delay and try and get 90%, 100%, perfection is the enemy of progress. So you're just wasting your time trying to get the little bits right and trying to do this, like, fuck that, forget about it. Just get 70% happy with it. That's perfect. And go. So when you're 70% happy, you understand Facebook ads, run ads. Run ads, get it wrong, feel the pain, learn the lesson, reflect on what happened, try it again. Didn't work, feel the pain, reflect on it, go again. Okay, goes again. You've got it. Something's working. Your CPA is low, your cash flow in, you might be self-liquidating, which means you're making more money than you're spending. Perfect. Right. Now find a good agency, hire them, give them the money. This is what I want.
Yeah. Nice. I want to dive into some of your hiring process then. Obviously, not so much the outsourcing to, say, agencies, and as more the team that you built. For example, hiring myself, I guess the current team that's there now, and then obviously the members that have been through previously that have come and gone. I guess, how did you build your hiring process where essentially you had very low, I guess you had very low turnover in terms of writers for the product that we'll dive into in a little bit. And you also, you retained them well, and you seem to bring in experts relatively easily. So how did you end up doing that?
Yeah, good. Again, I've got systems. And when you say about turnover, I actually call it team lifetime period. So I'm just pulling it up now. So you might understand customer lifetime period, which is how long does a customer stay with your business? Well, I applied it to your team as well. Team lifetime period. So how long does a member of staff stay with us? And I can see, where's James DeLacy? I'm looking at him now. You joined in August 2017.
I think I'm the longest.
I think you might. No, Francisco Tavares. He joined December 2016. He's the OG, but he's left. He's gone.
Yeah, but he.
Yeah, but he.
Yeah, he left.
But you've outpaced him. So what I'm looking at now is, I know you joined in August 2017. I know Francisco joined in December 16. So in terms of months, you've been with us for 59 months, right? So, and you don't know I've got this stuff, yeah. So I'm just going to run some quick maths. I want to know that. What's that? 59 divided by 12. You've been with us now for 4.9 years. It's pretty cool. So,
yeah.
Just because I love it. So how do we go about hiring? You've got to look within. I have particular ways of doing it. I built an audience first, right? And then once I had the audience and people looked to Science for Sport as an authority in the industry, or just as a place in the industry, what people want to do, and it's slightly different for each industry, what people in the industry want to do, sports scientists, is they want to build a personal profile, right? They want to get out there. They want to put their name out there so that they get called up for conferences. They can put on their LinkedIn that they work for this company for this long, doing this job. It's better for their CV, their resume, and stuff like that. So it's a win for them because they get to build their profile, substantiate their resume and CV. It's a win for us because we bring in talent that we can use to produce content. And it's a win for the customer because they get to consume high quality content from industry experts, right? So it's a win-win-win. So what I did is I had a system for it. Once I built the website and had an audience on Facebook, on Instagram, blah, blah, I had a page on the website that said, join our team. And it was in the footer of the website. So you could click it, it would pull up a new page and it'd say, do you want to join our team? These are the benefits. Build your profile. We've got an audience of 500,000 people, blah, blah. Get paid, work remotely. I can't remember what they all were, but so we listed all the benefits. So it's attractive. People would hit the page, go, oh yeah, this looks brilliant. I want to work for these guys. Bam, bam, bam. And then we add a autofill thing. So name, email address, highest level qualification, whether you've got an undergrad, master's, PhD, whatever. Write a 250 word explainer why you want to join us. Upload your resume, upload your cover letter. They'd come through. I'd have someone on the other side who's vetting, going through, okay, this guy's got a PhD, blah, blah, he works at this club. Yeah, brilliant, stick him in the yes pile. This person's a fisherman and he dropped out in school and he just wants to earn money online, probably stick him in the no pile. And it's just, and that's no disrespect, fisherman or whatever, it's just you're not an industry expert in sports science, right? So don't take that the wrong way. And so we had someone vet them, and then we'd have a folder of all these resumes and a list, a Google Sheet of people. Okay, James DeLacy, Texas, USA, master's degree, works at this place. This is LinkedIn. And it was just a document of all these people who wanted to join the team. And so that's how we start accumulating a list of people who wanted to join. And then the more people we get want to join, you pick the cream of the crop, you ask them who they know, who are good, build, and go from there.
That's how I got involved with Science of Sport, is through Tim, who was writing the section. He was leaving, and then I think he referred me through to you.
Okay, yeah, well, see, I forgot about that. Yeah, so that's just it. People who are in the industry and, just in the industry, whatever industry you're in, if you're in painting or music or sports science or lawn mowing, you know who the good people are, and the good people hang out with the good people, want to hang out with the good people, so you can just ask them for referrals and stuff like that.
I think it's interesting as well, like, I don't know if it's unique to sports science strength conditioning in terms of the niche, but strength conditioning coaches are so used to giving for free that it becomes almost, I guess you could say, easier to bring talent on board to write or whatever it's for your site, because it's like payments like not really expected compared to, say, I don't know, making money online or something.
Yeah, and to a degree I agree with that. I think one thing I've started to notice is industries are very similar, but everybody thinks that every industry is unique, sure, but most industries are similar. And then again, most people in their industry think that this is just problems of our industry. So I was deeply, both of us were deeply involved in sports science and strength and conditioning. We know that. And everybody was complaining about the same thing, no jobs, low pay, blah, 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 job competition, all this stuff, right? Like I invest in property and I see property education companies. We were a sports science education company, still are, property education companies. They've got people who want to build their profile of being a property investor. And they want to build their audience as being a property investor and teaching people. And I got sent through an Excel spreadsheet yesterday from a property investment company, like a buying agent who are trying to educate to build their audience as content marketing, right? They're doing it as content marketing. And I looked at a spreadsheet. I was like, this just looks like a shit one that most people in sports science would produce. I was like, these industries are absolutely mirrored. Like, they're so reflective. And so everybody gets bogged down, and I got bogged down, which was part of the reason for the exit, in the problems inside a niche and forget about the upside. And you get so immersed in the problems that you get blind to the upside to it and realize that most industries are all the same. So that's off tangent, but yeah, something I realized.
Yeah, I mean, I see the same job complaints on SEO Twitter as well, like pay, you know, shit hours, all that stuff. So I mean, it's, yeah, I see the same stuff. Like, okay, so, and it's the same things, like different people within this industry having beef with other people and whatever else, and you're like, yeah, okay, so everything's the same. It doesn't matter which industry or profession you move into, they've all got the same problems.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go, everybody's a victim, everybody's got the same problems. Like this is the thing. This is just a dig at society, I suppose, but everybody's a victim when it comes to like economics and their personal finances. But nobody, how many people do you know, go away and learn about how to save money, how to invest money, how to earn more money? Fucking 5% of the population, 10% of the population probably do. The rest don't, and then the rest complain about it. It's like, well, why don't you go away and educate yourself? And if you're not going to be willing to educate yourself on at least the fundamentals of like managing money, saving money, blah, 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 don't complain about it. But I know that can be a sore topic because obviously people are struggling with things like that, which I completely understand, but at least take some ownership to try and learn some fundamentals of it. But yeah, there you go. That is off on a tangent.
That's what, that's good. That's what I guess most people listening to this are doing as well anyway, since they're trying to build their own websites and educating themselves here, which is great. But I actually wanted to talk about how, so you hired staff, you have the traffic now, and then you look to launch your first product. And maybe you want to dive into what that product was, how you came up with this being the right fit as the first product. And then I guess why you chose a subscription model over selling, say, one-off, whatever it was, like say training programs.
Okay, there's three questions there, weren't there? I'm going to have to try and remember them. The first one was what, sorry?
What it was to start with.
What it was, a monthly magazine.
What the product was, yeah.
Okay, in simple terms, it's a monthly magazine. To expand on that, it was a digital-only magazine because, like most people here, they understand online, right? I couldn't be asked with logistics of dealing with physical products. I can't be asked with someone calling our customer support, sending us an email, say, oh, the postman didn't deliver it this Saturday morning when I was in. He said it's at the post office, got to pick it up. My dog's sick. Like, I don't care about that. Like, I just want the quickest, most efficient delivery of your product without the headache. You're happy, I'm happy, everything like that. So most people listening to this obviously like digital businesses, right? So they understand that already. So that was first and foremost why I did it as a digital business, as a digital product. It was a monthly magazine, and that magazine was a summary of the latest sports science research. So, for instance, James hosted his podcast. He's a gun. He absolutely knows sports science, strength and conditioning like the back of his hand. He's a very smart bloke. He knows he's got undergrad degree, master's degree. If I'm right, you got a master's degree, if I remember. And he knows how to read and interpret sports science research. Every single month, new research is published saying that ice baths only work at 10 degrees water temperature Celsius if you use for more than 8 minutes or something like that, right? Or it says that foam rolling doesn't work if you just do it for 10 seconds. You need to spend 60-90 seconds doing it on one muscle, something like that, right? So you get an understanding of this research. And what James would do, in our research reviewers, we call them, is they would read the latest research, would have a list of different research, consolidate it, say, right, these are the ones, these are the top 10 we want to send to our audience this month because they're the most important for our readers. Summarize them into a little one pager, like this is what the research did, this is what the study did, this is the practical applications, and this is the reviewer's comments. We put that into a PDF document and we sent it out every single month. So it's a monthly magazine of the latest research. What was the second question? Sorry.
How did you come up with this as the viable product? Did you have anything else in mind, or was this just like what made you think that this would be the right fit? Essentially.
Yeah, good question. I questioned myself on that afterwards. It was funny. I wanted to do a membership model for the subscription, which is your third question, right? So I had the sticky revenue. Recurring revenue. So I wanted to build a membership platform. And so what I did was I created a list of features or benefits of that membership. So research reviews, video courses, articles, tools like Google Sheets and spreadsheets that coaches could use to record athlete data and all this stuff. And I just thought, how much of this stuff can I pack into this monthly membership to pad it out, to make it of X value? And I looked at it all and I got, and this was right back. Obviously, I had no idea about business until 2016. And I thought, that's a lot of work for me to do. I can't produce all that per month. Maybe what I could do is I could do a research review magazine. That would be the simplest. That could be the first thing I do. And then I add other bits to it as time goes on. So I just thought, okay, it's the simplest, cheapest, quickest sort of thing I can do. Let's do that. And then we can put one out every month. And that's the thing, is you've got fresh content every single month. So it means you can have repeat customers, which is what I wanted. I wanted reoccurring revenue. So I looked at that membership model, but I didn't want to be chasing customers every single month. And this is the problem with like drop shipping companies, in my opinion anyway. Like, just as a business owner, it's not a problem other than in terms of unit economics and making money, but it's just the headache of chasing new customers every single month and getting one-off purchases and stuff. Like, I couldn't be bothered with that. So I wanted a subscription model. As a side note, I heard something recent, like maybe about a year ago, that I thought was quite interesting, and I don't know the validity of it, but apparently it's moved in cycles. So maybe 70s, 80s, subscription was a big thing, and people had subscriptions for a lot of things. I could be wrong, could be completely wrong. I don't know. I can't remember where I heard it. But, and then people got fed up of having so many subscriptions that people moved to a one-time payment option, and then people gravitated towards that. And now we've gone full circle where everything was one-time payment, and now people got, and then companies go, oh, let's do subscription. There's a reduction. So now it's going like this. So now we might be seeing the swings move back to more subscription, then eventually go back to one-time payment, and we just do that through the decades. That might be the way it happens, who knows. But yeah, that is a side note. But right now the getting's good with subscription and recurring revenue, and it adds value to the business, which I'm sure everybody here understands as well, you know, in terms of valuations and access.
Do you want to maybe touch on some very general, I guess, revenue and maybe traffic figures as you kind of went through from starting, I guess, this product, and then doesn't have to be where it is now, because I know you sold it and it might be some legal stuff, but maybe to, I don't know, sometime before you sold it?
Yeah, so I basically started the website in 2016, launched the website and the product, and I sold it 4 years later, 2020, 3 years, 11 months. In that time frame, first year, we did, it's about, I don't know, say 30 to 50,000 pounds, which is about 50,000 to 70,000 US dollars in revenue. Mm-hmm. And then after that, the growth was linear. So we went up to about 175,000 pounds to 250,000 to eventually 330,000. So that was the growth, obviously. That's how much you kind of put in. That was recurring revenue, basically, because we just had that subscription product. Mm-hmm. So, that's the evolution of revenues. Traffic at exit, we had about 85,000 unique visits a month from memory. So over that span, obviously it's incremental and it's variable. So we probably generated in the range of 2 million, I don't know, a couple of million total hits, total unique visits over that 4 year period at the time of exit.
So in terms of you deciding to exit, what were the reasons or signs for you to look to sell the business? And then did you have to do, obviously you had your systems in place, you probably didn't have to do much, but was there anything that you had to do extra to be ready to sell?
So two questions is kind of why I wanted to sell, is that right? And then the second one is what did I have to do to get ready to sell? First question, it was risk tolerance for me. In order to grow and take it to the next level, I felt like I had to put a lot of money back into it. Like I needed to get a new website. That meant either paying an agency to do it externally, which cost, I don't know, probably upwards of £30,000, $50,000, do you know what I mean? Into the six figures. Like it's expensive to get a full custom site. And then what happens is you're at the mercy of those developers. So if they turn around, if they get an issue, you say, I need this fixed. They go, oh, we're really busy at the minute, can't do it for 2 weeks. You're like, well, my website's down. The customers can't get access. I need you to fix it now. They say, okay, we can do it, but it's going to cost you twice as much. Something like that, right? Like you're at their mercy.
Yeah.
So I was scared of that, which meant maybe I'll hire an internal developer. But at the same time, developers don't like using other people's code. It's just like an IP type thing, and they can make more money by saying, I don't want to touch that code, so pay for my code. Developers are just hot property, right? And you find a good one and stuff like that. So we're always at their mercy. So I didn't have the risk tolerance to plow all the money back in. I didn't have my net worth wasn't bad, but it wasn't at a point where I was comfortable and maybe losing it all. I was just fearful, right? It's like I was genuinely just fearful. And so I didn't have the risk tolerance to grow it from a cash perspective, personal finance perspective, whatever. I could have reinvested all the money it was making back in, but I wanted to sort of build my wealth and go about that. I was still putting X amount back into it. So that was a large reason for the sale. I'd also got bogged down in industry, like just like back and forth, do you know what I mean? Like competitors doing this and doing that, like, there's a bit of that. I just kind of got fed up about the industry and thought, and I lost sight of it. I saw this big thing, this bodybuilding.com, $100 million exit, sports science, how big it could be, the global encyclopedia, sports science encyclopedia and sports medicine. And as I built, I got more and more tunnel vision, because to target everyone is to target no one. It's a good saying I like. If you try and target nutritionists, strength and conditioning coach, sports tech guys, sport coaches, everything, then you need to produce so much content so fast to keep all those people engaged that you end up targeting no one. So I got very specific, and as you know, we went hard basically just in on strength and conditioning. And I just saw that tunnel vision, lost sight of the global picture of how big it could be, and just looked at, oh, this is just a strength and conditioning site. Risk tolerance, industry bogged down, and that was it. And I also, when it comes to selling it in terms of preparation, like I didn't necessarily want to say it, I listed it as a win-win scenario. So if I listed it and nobody wanted to buy it, I figured out, I got to learn why they didn't want to buy it, where the holes were, which meant a stronger business for me because I was going to plug those holes. So I just had people in real time telling me, nah, I don't want this business for X, Y, Z. And I go, okay, thanks for that heads up. Like, off I go. I'm going to build a more profitable business then. Or like, I'm going to plug these holes. I'm going to get more traffic sources, or I'm going to make sure the revenue's stickier or anything like that, right? So, or it needs a bigger Instagram page or more engagement on Instagram. Whatever it was, I went away and fixed that. So I had a juicier beast to, and just self-learning. And the other win, so that was one of the wins. The other win was, if someone comes along and they want to pay a price that I'm willing to sell it for, then happy days, right? And by doing that, I de-risked myself personally. Yeah. So I'm confident that I know enough about content businesses that I can build another one and do the exact same thing, but this time not exit and build it into a monster until maybe I want to exit for a lot more money. So it was about, I didn't have the risk to grow it, bogged down the industry. I did it as a win-win. So I wanted to see where the holes were with a bit. I listed it so I could find out, so I could find out where the issues were and I could plug them. If somebody wanted to buy it for a price, I was willing to sell it. Brilliant. And it de-risked myself if I did sell it, so that financially I feel more comfortable and I can take more risk on the next business, because I am not so fearful. So it was about really getting rid of that personal fear that I had. Do you know what I mean?
I think as website builders, we all live in that fear of Big G tanking our sites anyway. So I'm sure it's felt by everyone listening to this.
That's also why buyers want to see that you've got multiple marketing channels for stability, or that's a plus to look at, or it's also a negative for them to look at, because they look at it and go, oh, okay, well, he's already got all of these marketing channels. I can't add much more to it. Whereas if you've just got Google and there's no Instagram, there's no YouTube, no email, then they go, he's missing a trick here. I'm going to add these on. So it's two sides of the same coin when it comes to selling a site. Buyers either see the opportunity or they see the strength, but they do see both.
In hindsight, would you have sold when you sold? And I guess if not, or even if you were, how would you look to scale the site if you hadn't sold it?
Hindsight's a wonderful thing. It's a funny one. It's something I at least think about weekly, maybe even not daily, but I definitely think about it weekly. Would I have sold it? I don't think I should have sold it. No. And some much wealthier and very smarter people, like a Decker and a Hector millionaire, so tens of millions, hundreds of millions, told me not to sell it at the time. So obviously listen to their advice or whatever. But at the same time, I wouldn't have necessarily have learned the lessons I have now if I didn't sell it. So, and this is what I got to realize, is a good story. And it's in the film Social Network about Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg. I can't remember all the details of it, but it's a cool story. Mm. Whatever. They're in a bar, and he says, they're talking about the founder of Victoria's Secret. He sold out for something like 10 million. 3 years later, the acquiring company sold it for like 300 million, and he threw himself off the Golden Gate Bridge. Now, I don't know the exact details of that story. Hopefully nobody's listening who's related or anything. I've got the story wrong, but it's pretty much on that. If you want to hear the story, watch The Social Network. So the reason I tell that story is, like, I can't let myself live in the past of, I shouldn't have sold it because this is what it could be. And if it gets sold for multiple millions, like tens of millions, hundreds of millions or whatever later down the line, I've just got to look at it that I did what I could and I saw this big vision and my vision was correct and take the benefits from it, right? So no, I don't regret selling. I think selling was the right thing for me to do, but not the right thing to do. Where could it go now? I don't want to say too much because obviously the acquiring company, I still work with them. I've been on a 2-year key man locking contract. So like stay with a company. It was a 6-month clause. I could leave after 6 months, but I've enjoyed it. and things are really progressing and moving forward now, and it looks like we're going to extend and stuff like that. So I don't want to give too much away because we're building the grand vision and it's developing now. But it's to build out my original plan, you know, like things are going to be an absolute beast. So yeah, that's kind of where it's going now. And I'm excited about where it's going. You know, it's fun to be part of it and kind of lay out my vision to a degree, do you know what I mean? And see it come to life at least. So.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that the fact that you've gone through the whole process now, building to selling, and as you mentioned, now you believe, like, doesn't matter, you know, what kind of content business it is, you can replicate that, but take it to even bigger heights because you've now gone through the whole process and you understand from beginning to the end.
Exactly, yeah. And that was another reason for selling. So I wanted to understand the exit process, because when you build a business, you should build it with the exit in mind. So I it's funny, I see a lot, depends what you want. I see a lot of companies, a lot of online companies, and it just be some sort of Amazon FBA or dropshipping, or like just, I don't know, I think a lot of NAF companies, they might be good in terms of cash flow and stuff like that, but I would rather focus on building one really good company that solves an industry problem and provides all that than just doing some sort of drop shipping cash flow business. Like, but that's just me personally. It's not to say there's anything wrong with doing that. So I wanted to go through that exit process so I learned all the benefits of selling a business, or how it all works in terms of selling. So that next time from the get-go, I'm going to build with the exit in mind, and I can build a monster that I either keep for cash flow or I exit, or exit X amount of shares. If there's 100 shares in the company, I might end up selling 10, 20, 30, 50, 80, whatever it is percentage of those shares, and retain X amount and still keep cash flow. Yeah, like I think it's a very good lesson to learn, is how to sell a business. But yeah, like I said, that's three phases I would say: build, scale, sell. Scale it to X amount. And yeah, the next challenge is to scale a company 7, 8, 9 figures. If I want to go to 9 figures, 8 figures would be cool. But I think to get to 9 figures, you've got to be a completely different beast. And that means normally just dedicating your entire life to that project. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not sure if that's – like, I want to dedicate my life to it, but I also want to enjoy my life. I think you've got to find a good medium between enjoying your life and doing that. There's Sir Alex Ferguson, the greatest sort of football manager of all time, in my opinion, like second maybe Pep Guardiola. He's the manager of Manchester United Football Club. And, like, you watch his bio story and he literally just – all in, dedicated his entire life. And you see this with like other founders, entrepreneurs, and he didn't see his kids growing up. All he did was work. Like, he barely spent time with his kids, you know. And for me personally, I think there's lessons to be learned in that, from both. You need to do that to be really successful, but you need to not do that if you want to enjoy your time with your kids and your family. Because if let's face it, we're all just humans, we're just bags of cells, you know what I mean, floating around. Like, you might get ill, you might get terminally ill in the next couple of years or anything like that. It's just reality of life. So you want to make sure you have a good life. And so my motto, my kind of life thing to it is do something worth doing, build it big, build it with the exit in mind, but make sure you maintain your own personal life and enjoyment.
Nice. That's a good message for everyone listening. It's actually a good little spot to end on. I know, I guess people might want to follow what you're doing now, but I know no one can follow you because you're like a recluse now. You're like the entrepreneur that exited, then just went to the woods and has gone off the grid. So no one can actually follow what you're doing. And I think you told me your working rule now is what, 3 hours a week or something like that? So you can just go surfing?
Yeah, not quite 3 hours, a bit more, but yeah, I just surf. I surf the majority of the time. Skate, so I met Jared. And so I just do that. Yeah, I'd spend the majority of my time sort of chilling, but it also allows me freedom to think about next projects. I'll do some investing and stuff like that and self-education. So I spend like some of my time doing that. But yeah, I have just a good sort of work-life balance, in my opinion, the amount I like. I am a recluse. I hide in the background. I don't want all this sort of, I don't want to be in the limelight all the time. Like, I just want to chill, go about my life and enjoy it, do you know what I mean? But still do something meaningful and big. And I felt like I did that with Science for Sport, and I feel like it will continue to do that. And in my next project, we'll do that as well. But I just love chatting with entrepreneurs and stuff like that. So I'm actually like, if anyone is interested, probably not, but if anyone's interested and they do want to chat to me, I'm happy to put my little Calendly link free of charge. You just jump on and chat 30 minutes. I'm happy to chat about the business and all that. I just like connecting with hungry, interested entrepreneurs around the world and hearing what they're doing, hearing about their businesses and stuff like that. So I'll give you my little Calendly link. People can book in for like a 30-minute chat. I enjoy it. Do you know what I mean? Entrepreneurship, business. It's just a challenge, you know, and I'm a former wannabe athlete and we just like that challenge. So I think that's probably where the passion comes from. So I'm keen to chat to anyone if they want to chat. But yeah, you don't find me on most things. You will find me on LinkedIn, but I don't really use it. And so everything else, I just stay quiet because it keeps my motorway, my highway free. I've got too many cars on my motorway and everybody wants to talk to me, wants time and email me and messaging me. It's like I can't focus on my task. And the other good one as well, the goal is to keep the goal. One of my lecturers at uni told me that. I thought it was brilliant. So whatever your goal is, keep that goal the goal and go for that.
Nice. So it might be dangerous putting your Calendly link in the description, but we're going to put it there anyway.
We'll see what
any
happens.
Any advice to chat to you about any kind of entrepreneurship?
Yeah. But I'm not talking about your sick dog. Yeah, no offense. It's just too much time for me.
Fair enough. But I mean, if not, people can actually check out scienceforsport.com and they can kind of see what Owen's built there. I think the site's being restructured at the moment, so I don't know when that gets launched, but when this episode comes out, if you head there, it'll still be the old website, so you can kind of see what's happening there and anything else. And thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it, Owen.
No, no problem at all. Thanks for having me on, mate. The last, say, the 5 years we had you with, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. So you're a gun at what you do. You're obviously killing it now and what you're doing here. So I'm pleased to see it's going well. I hope you're enjoying Texas with those massive mosquitoes. But, yeah, all good. Cheers, mate.
Massive mosquitoes, a massive barbecue.
Yeah. Oh, we don't mind that, though, do we? We do like that.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode. Goodbye.